Welcome to Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. This is a weekly podcast of Sunday homilies and theological reflections given by the staff of the Catholic community and their guests. Today's speaker is Father Xavier Lavaghetto, OP, pastor and director of the Catholic community. It is the second Sunday in Lent, and the readings are from Cycle B.
I wanted to pass over that story of the binding of Isaac. If you were the preacher, wouldn't you? How could God command Abraham, take your son, your only one, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and there you shall offer him up as a holocaust? Imagine Abraham's horror, and later Isaac's terror. What kind of a God makes such a demand? What kind of a father would even obey it? So I figure I got some tall talking to do to somehow explain this and somehow still connect it to the Transfiguration. That's a stretch. I think the first thing you have to remember is that Genesis is not just a mere account. As if, okay, it happened there, do what it says, that's it. No. Genesis is also a commentary on the human heart and the pagan world in which Judaism had to survive. It was a challenge. It meant to be a challenge to that way of thinking. And child sacrifice was common throughout the Canaan, along the Phoenician coast, Israel, throughout the Fertile Crescent. Indeed, if you really were a religious man, of course you'd be willing to sacrifice your son. It was kind of expected. Of course, it rested on two ideas. The dad owned his kids, literally. And sacrifice demands the very, very best. In this case, killing. Something's amiss. For all of Judaism will stand against it. Certainly we want Abraham to object. Take me, don't take my son. But he didn't. And of course, if he hadn't, his neighbors, the people around him would simply call him irreligious. Leave it to Genesis to question the accepted piety. Now, regretfully, our reading today is sliced and diced reading, and it omits some verses. So let me fill in the missing verses from the Jewish Bible. Avraham took the wood for the burning, for the burnt offering, and laid it on Yitzhak, his son. Then he took in his hand the fire and the knife. Now remember these next words. And they both went on together. Yitzhak spoke to Abraham, his father, my father. And he answered, here I am, my son. I see the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Abraham replied, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. And they both went on together. Now, anytime you get a repeated phrase like that in Hebrew, it says, question, question, what's going on? It's like an exclamation point. Abraham's words are intentionally ambiguous. Regretfully, it doesn't carry over in the English. So those same words could be translated this way. God will provide for himself. The lamb for the burnt offering is my son. And they both went on together. They went on together into the deadly dread. No wonder Jewish tradition Jesus, for that matter, said that Isaac knew and urged his father on, that Isaac freely laid down on the wood. As the text said, they both went on together. How could they do that except that somehow, they both shared a very personal trust in God? Now, I admit it, I don't like a God who tests just to find out the mettle of a man. But I know that it is in the very testing that Abraham's mettle was hammered in the fire and made strong. Trust is made real in the very act of trusting. Love is proven real in the sacrifice, in the giving of yourself. Isn't that what spouses ask of each other? The total gift of each other. Abraham trusted God. Isaac trusted his father. The measure of our love is our willingness to give ourselves without reserve. On Mount Moriah, later called Jerusalem, when God stopped Abraham, he forever ended any thought of human sacrifice among Jews. But something else was being rejected, that any man owns his children, or for that matter, any human being. The ancients thought it, and some, I think, still claim it when they try to live out their dream in their sons' and daughters' lives. But we don't. Children are pure gift to be cherished, nourished. The test of Abraham was not the sacrifice of his son, but giving up, the willingness to give up his own future, his own sense of ownership of his son. The sacrifice God really wanted was not Isaac's death, but the sacrifice that was Abraham's total gift of himself. When you hear the word sacrifice, think not death. Think the gift of self. In today's gospel, once again, there is a journey to the Mount of Transfiguration, and then from there to Mount Moriah, to Jerusalem, to death. Once again, a command, this is my beloved son, listen to him. Once more, a son will freely walk, freely carry the wood, freely lie down, and be bound, and in this case, literally die. What God would not ask Abraham to do, God does as a free gift. You might say God in Jesus really gives himself into our hands, knowing full well what we would do. We would slay him. God proves that he has the devotion of Abraham for us. Jesus has the generosity of Isaac for us. The measure of divine love is Jesus giving himself into us who slayed him. He didn't have to do it. Never, ever think that Jesus had to die as by some kind of divine logic. No way. But rather, there was no greater way to express love than the gift of self, even unto death. True love is passionate in the extreme. That's what God has for us. The glory and identity of the love that is revealed is revealed at the journey's beginning. This is God's act himself. God's act himself for us, for us. We didn't need to persuade him to love us. He's trying to persuade us that he loves us. He gives his all, for all, to all. So if Jesus wants a different kind of glory, the glory of love poured out for us and poured into us, it's not the pain, not the death that frees us. The Jewish notion of sacrifice, as I said, is gift. For Christians, Jesus is God's total gift of himself, not merely for us, but to us and in us. God floods himself into us. The measure of love is our willingness to give ourselves as gift. And that Eucharist from this table says it again and again. It explains the cross. Take, eat, this is my body. Take, drink, this is my blood. He gave himself to us, and we crucified him. He still gives himself as a total gift into our hands, no matter all that. He says, let me be a part of you. Let me be your love, your life. Jesus embraces death, mounts the cross, becomes our food and drink, all to make God's love real in you. Jesus' sacrifice is not primarily about dying, but about giving. And so there are three moments of sacrifice, three moments. The very first sacrifice is the Father's own. He gives you his very self in giving you his Son, the Word made flesh. And that Son, in that act of love between Father and Son, gives himself back to the Father, the second motion of love. And the third motion, we celebrate here, but no priest can do for you. Will you let Jesus pray in you, be in you? Will you give yourself along with Jesus back to the Father for the sake of all? There's no way of escaping. If we want to, in fact, be enveloped in love, then we have to give ourselves in love. And yeah, we can do it in giant ways, and it's wonderful for those who have the stamina for it. But the giving, each of us has to do. Now, we've been doing some little witness talks. You've probably noticed over the year, there's kind of slowly increasing. To make it real, to make it practical, to say that the love has to begin now. Grace is going to explain one way she became a gift of love. And maybe it'll be for you an invitation to give yourself as a gift of love practically, personally, directly, in some small way. Grace?
Good afternoon. My name is Grace Chiarella, and I'm a first-year master's student in the teacher education program. I've been asked to say a few words today about my involvement with the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd Mentorship Program. This program connects middle school students with college student or sometimes graduate student mentors. And I heard about this program in a quick talk after Mass one evening, and a few different factors motivated my decision to participate. For starters, I wanted to find a way to get involved with the Catholic community outside of weekly Mass. I also had some experience working with middle school students, and I actually once was a middle school student, so I knew how fun, dramatic, tempestuous, and important those years could be. I first met my mentee, an eighth grade girl who was much cooler than I ever was in eighth grade, in October when we awkwardly sat on some couches and tried to get to know each other. The awkwardness between us has quickly dissipated, and since that day, we've hung out multiple times, we've eaten various types of food together, done a few other things, but really mostly eating. And she talks about her life, I talk about mine, we talk about movies, I try to convince her to read Harry Potter. Sometimes we talk about God, and in essence, we're friends, albeit with a 10-year age difference. I'd like to think that both of us are getting something out of our mentorship friendship. I know I have. Meeting with my mentee is a chance for me to do what we, caught up in our jobs and classes and homework and Netflix, don't do often enough, which is really connect with people as individuals and establish meaningful relationships. It's really easy to stay comfortable inside the bubble of a university and limit my interactions to 20-somethings and professors. But this unique friendship allows me to step out of that every once in a while, connect with real people living real life. I'm not exaggerating when I said I had to go look up some middle school lingo. It is a changing world out there. Mostly what I've gotten out of this program is a new friend, a special person who brings unique perspectives and thoughts and questions into my life, who makes me think twice about all the wisdom that I thought I'd amassed through these years, and who makes me laugh after a long day of work and classes. I'm really grateful that I jumped blindly at the opportunity to embark on this friendship. And through the mentorship program, I have met more people in the Catholic community, other young people, fellow mentors, and those who help oversee and administrate the programs. And all of this has been a great blessing in my life. Thank you for letting me share my experience with you today.
This has been a presentation of Catholic Cardinal Reflections, the regular podcast of the Catholic community at Stanford University. Director, Gary Glover. With music by Albert Tommaso and Shane Clarkson. For more information, please visit our website at catholic.stanford.edu or visit our offices on the third floor of Old Union. Till next time, God bless you.